Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Also North America and the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, which is the nation's largest Muslim umbrella organization. On December 5th, he sent a letter of over 30 organizations nationwide to the Department of Homeland Security asking Secretary Mayorkas to consider having DHS offer special humanitarian parole for Cameroonian refugees because they are being profoundly affected by five ongoing armed conflicts with Cameroon. There is a very large Cameroonian diaspora. And, refugees from Cameroon have gone from Africa to Europe to also the Caribbean. And they also find themselves in the United States. And the United States has actually has already provided TPS, temporary protected status, for those who are currently in the United States. But we're looking to expand this with humanitarian parole. And if that is achieved, it would be the first time the United States government has offered humanitarian parole to Africa, which I think is a deficit in our own immigration system. I think that's something we can, definitely discuss during this. For you on this call, why is the issue of humanitarian parole so important to the Cameroonian community? And you there, please respond. Dahiru, as an advocate for humanitarian parole, what has your experience been as a both capsized refugee and advocate speaking?
Okay, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Basically, I would like to talk to myself alongside my brothers and sisters who are with us right here in St. Kitts and Nevis, because for the past years we've gone through a lot because of the challenges we face back home, the genocide, the war. I don't know if you know about the ongoing war happening in the English-speaking part of Cameroon. So we've been having a civil war for about 8 years, which has affected so many areas. Many youth have been killed. Many families have lost their sons and daughters. And to an extent, I was affected by this war. So I had to flee to risk my life. I am young and I wanted to live and I wanted to achieve something for myself and my family. So I had to flee, which I found myself in Antigua. And while in Antigua, I faced a stigma about Africans. So I had this negative stereotype about Africans. So I won't really say I found myself in the boat, but I ended up taking a very risky decision where I was on the boat trying to get myself to the U.S. Virgin Island, where I could experience my basic human rights. And ongoing, and on the way, the boat got capsized. We was 32 on board, and I lost 16 people died, and I was very, very lucky to survive. So then when we survived, we got locked up in St. Kitts for about 3 months and some weeks. And we got released, and ever since then, things haven't really been easy for us. So this special humanitarian parole for Cameroonians and immigrants, is going to go a long way, as it will really help us in St. Kitts and Nevis here. I don't know if you want me to expand more details. I just like give a brief background about.
So, I think for our audience, can you clarify what special humanitarian parole is and how that could impact you?
Special humanitarian parole I'm seeking for because I've been recognized by the United Nations as a refugee, which they started a procedure on like a resettlement process to the United States, but it's been months and we are still trying to go through the procedure. And living here in St. Kitts and Nevis is really, really difficult because the people have this stigma about us Africans. Trying to integrate within the society is really, really tough and difficult. I can barely move outside without getting curses like, I should go back to my country. So staying here is really, really difficult. As it messes up with my mental health because what I went through in the sea, when I was in the boat capsized, and basically I was in the sea for about 4 hours. So I'm still trying to recover from the experience because, moreover, I had no life jacket on. I don't know how I survived. It's kind of miraculous, but I believe Allah knows best.
By Allah, we all live. Imam Salaman, we were just asking the question, glad to have you back. We were asking the question of what getting special humanitarian parole means for Cameroonian refugees, just like we were hearing from the experience from Imran. And Imran, where are you based right now?
In St. Kitts and Nevis.
So, Imam?
Naam. All right, thank you, Dr. Robert. It's a pleasure. Sorry for the network disruptions here. Foremost, we all, as think, aware that Cameroon is hit by five heavy armed conflicts, and this conflict has led to loss of lives, violations of human rights, abuse, especially to both genders, and most particularly to the female gender. In this case, we are looking at a situation where a country is in the middle of a crisis, and more other crises from other countries are coming in place to aggravate the current situation at hand. There is an internal crisis, and then there are about three heavy external crises that are already applying pressure, aggravating the loss of life, damages made to properties, and displacement of more than 1.5 million Cameroonians. And I think that the U.S. has been a hub for receiving most of the displaced persons in Cameroon. More than 10,000 Cameroonians are already based in U.S. so far. And I think Imran is a living proof to tell us his experience on the essence of this humanitarian parole because of what he experienced. But I will emphasize that Cameroon needs foremost from the U.S. government the aspect of refugee resettlement, very essential, especially in the Anglophone regions of the country where we have the Fulani Muslims have been abused by the separatist fighters. Their properties damaged, their cows stolen, and even usurped, forcefully seized. In this case, you realize that they are the minority here. The Fulanis are the minority in Cameroon, and they are oppressed. And coming to the context of oppression, I would like to quote the statement of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, where he has mentioned himself warning us to stay away from foremost in Surah Al-Hujurat, that is chapter 49, verse number 10 to 13. It mentions clearly that foremost, we should know that we are brothers and sisters, and we should not harm one another. We should not oppress one another. We should not cause harm or even backbite, talkless of coughing or mocking at others. But then we realize that in the human milieu, there is this aspect of what we call tribal racism, especially in the context of Cameroon. There is what is called tribal racism, and that is what is aggravating the conflict, where you realize that because you are a Fulani, you are a Muslim man, and maybe you have nothing to do with this other person of this tribe, they happen to lodge an attack on you and oppress you because you are a minority, which is a violation of human rights, because we all have the right to live, and we all like to have the right to express ourselves. That's the first aspect of severity here that needs to be taken care of. And in this case, the internal leadership has really failed to address the issue up to now, and the matter is on the rise. That's why you find most of the people fleeing to areas that are a little bit safer according to them. But then when they go, we have the Boko Haram armed conflict. There are people who have escaped from the northwest, southwest, gone to the northern regions, thinking that they are safer there, but then they fall in the hands of the Boko Haram fighters or the armed groups that way. And those who escape to this region, Betwa, they happen to fall in the middle of the Seleka and Anti-Baleka fighters that are coming from Central African Republic. This is another terrorist group. So in this case, you realize that there is urgent need for resettlement plan, refugee resettlement plan. And we hope that the U.S. has always played a significant role because of its bilateral ties with Cameroon. We realize that there is a recent TPS, that is temporary protected status, that the U.S. government has offered Cameroonians who did not yet have the legal status of living in the U.S. currently due to the advocacy of the Cameroon American Council alongside all its partners, and I think CARE is included. And this has helped Muslims in particular to gain some, you know, protected status for 2 years, extended to 2025. But then that 2 years isn't enough to solve the problem that we have. There are still millions of people displaced here. So that's the first aspect of concern. So we are looking into a situation where we think that Cameroon deserves a special humanitarian parole, just like what has been done to Ukraine. Its financial and resources should be disbursed for the purpose of resettlement and then looking into the aspect of safety and protection, which in this case, even if we were to save just 1, 2, or 3, or 10 lives, the Quran says it is as if we have saved the entire humanity. So I think, yeah, that is the foremost, the main aspect that this letter is trying to address, looking into the aspect of protection of life, which is a necessity for each and every human life to be protected. And it is very essential that I recall us, or I kind of ask us to reflect again, that if we were to save just one person in a crisis zone, be it in Africa, in Cameroon, or in the Middle East, or in Palestine, we were to save just one and take him to safety. For instance, Imran here is someone who is already in such a condition in the U.S. I am trying to advocate on his behalf from Cameroon, because I know that saving him in the U.S. means a lot, in the sense that it's going to give me that ability to save a human soul. And saving just one human soul, according to Allah in Surah Al-Ma'idah, that is chapter 5, verse number 32, says that it is as if you have saved the entire humanity. And if you were to kill a soul, not for the purpose of murder, that soul did not murder another soul, or you are not retaliating because your own member or your own brother was killed, then it is as if you have killed the entire humanity. Therefore, there's no justification for murder, except to retaliate for killing that has been done, unjust killing or oppression. And secondly, to retaliate in a case where somebody is spreading what is called fasad. In Arabic, in English, is translated as what? I would say that corruption or mischief, which has no boundaries. Yeah, which has no boundaries. So therefore, we are finding ourselves in this case because there are some particular people who are causing mischief and corruption, and majority are suffering when those people are minority, but they are causing mischief. Therefore, I think that the essence of this letter is foremost to look into the aspect of securing a special humanitarian parole for Cameroonians, and more in particular for Muslim IDPs, Muslim people who have been displaced.
And you raised a really good question that I want to ask Dr. Geraldine Sinui, and that is, you know, what does humanitarian parole not only mean for Cameroonians, but because the U.S. government is backing the Francophonian government, which is attacking English-speaking regions, you know, what role does the U.S. government have in offering not only TPS but humanitarian parole? Because we are one of the many outside factors that are contributing to the destabilization of Cameroon. The doctor can unmute herself. I think she's there. Yeah.
Okay. You want me to give my view now?
Yeah, no, we definitely want to hear it.
Okay, I would have to confess that I do not know much about the program and the letter we are all talking about, because I was invited on board last night.
Ah.
And I'm quite a busy person. I had to go to work and then rush to see that I put a few things together for this meeting. I would like to speak about the problem that is the Anglophone, the English-speaking part of Cameroon has been experiencing since 2016.
Yes, please.
It's a lot of harm has been done. everyone residing in the northwest and southwest regions of Cameroon. I would like to give a brief history of what the northwest, the English-speaking part of Cameroon, is all about. Briefly, during colonization, there was, during the Industrial Revolution anyway, the European countries needed a market for their finished products. And therefore, after the Berlin West African Conference, European nations decided to partition Africa, Cameroon. First, that was the first European country to annex Cameroon. And then during the First World War, which was fought both in Europe and in and abroad, Africa and other territories, colonized territories abroad, France asked Britain to assist her to fight the Germans in the territory of Cameroon, because Cameroon was initially a German territory. And when the French and the British soldiers fought together in a way by sharing arbitrarily Cameroon into two portions, since Britain had already annexed Nigeria, which was close to the southern part of Cameroon, that's why you, with the, in the British history you have southern Cameroon, which mapped out. It was a little portion from the northern part of Cameroon, giving way to northern Nigeria, the northwest region of Cameroon, and the southwest region of Cameroon. They were bordering Nigeria. And Britain chose to take this portion that was close to Nigeria so that from the Eastern House of Assembly in Enugu in Nigeria, they could easily give orders, colonial orders, to the people resident in that territory in Cameroon, sorry, East Cameroon and West Cameroon. West Cameroon was the English-speaking part, and East Cameroon was the French-speaking part. And the French adopted the policy of assimilation, while they adopted this policy of indirect rule, that they ruled the people through their chiefs in the land. Consequently, African states that we colonized had been fighting for their independence. And in 1961, when Cameroon ruled to fight for her independence, the English-speaking part of Cameroon that belonged to Britain, they were asked whether they wanted to join their brothers and sisters in the eastern part of Cameroon, or they would like to join Nigeria. But they weren't given the third option of being an independent nation. And therefore, the only choice they had was to join French Cameroon. When they joined French Cameroon, the country was called the United Republic of Cameroon, with a flag with two stars showing that there were two countries that came together. Unity came one through history. And now, as time went on, the Anglophone, the English-speaking Cameroonians saw that they were somehow marginalized. And they have been asking for the government to balance up things so that they feel integrated, they feel treated in the same way like their brothers and sisters of the French expression. And the Anglophone, the English-speaking system of education and the law is different from the that in Cameroonian. And at one moment in 2016, lawyers asked that the French law shouldn't be imposed in the English-speaking court, and the educational body also felt that the French educational system should not encroach into the English-speaking system of education. And that notwithstanding, nothing was done, and at one moment in 2016, there was an upsurge that resulted into the crisis that we have today. So many people have been displaced, villages have been deserted, and the problem, trauma that people are actually experiencing, that there is no family in Cameroon, in the northwest and southwest region of Cameroon, other by this crisis. Villages have been shut down completely. There are no schools, no health care facilities, and the many people have migrated to the urban areas. Imam mentioned something. They say at least they escape to sections where they feel that are safe zones.
Yeah.
But there are no safe zones at all. Because even in the towns, there are killings every day, every now and then. There is a lot of danger. There is starvation. There is gender-based violence. Children have dropped out of school. There is trauma. Even little children as young as 2 years old already know about guns. They know about armored cars. They know about military helicopters. They know about all sorts of arms. And it's actually a traumatizing situation that needs international attention because everybody is suffering.
Can you take a look? Sorry, interrupt.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Can I go on?
Yes, please. I thought you paused, so I was going to ask you a question.
Okay, so my opinion is that there should be some kind of dialogue. There should be some kind of reconciliation to look into this problem. The problem shouldn't only be granting refugees safe zones out of the country. Is quite good. But what about those who can run away to America, those who don't have the means to even escape? Because everyone cannot leave the country. So the international body needs to come together to see that peace returns to the country and people return to their homes, to their villages, and life continues, and that the schools go on, and that the problem that was actually the root of this crisis should be looked into. That's my opinion.
Thank you so much for that. And can you speak at all about what interference the U.S. government has had inside Cameroon?
Yes, I have heard that the U.S. government has granted Cameroonians that opportunity to travel to the U.S. for the U.S. has opened her doors to Cameroonian refugees, and I really appreciate the U.S. government for that because they've been doing a lot for Cameroon, and the U.S. embassy in Cameroon has been doing to what it can do on the ground. And that notwithstanding, we, like Oliver Schwitz, are still asking for more.
Okay.
If there could be some kind of humanitarian outreach on the ground, on the field, where the actual thing is happening, like health care, provision, nutrition, safety, and homes, like Imam said, that they can set up to resettle most of the internally displaced persons within the English-speaking parts of Cameroon, it would be good.
Okay. Thank you so much for your insight and your expertise on these issues and explaining it in a way that our audience can better understand. Just opening it up for Imran, can you tell me, as a refugee, what your process has been for, you know, coming to the United States, either getting TPS or looking for humanitarian parole?
Basically, I haven't entered the United States yet. I'm still in the Caribbean on a very small island called St. Kitts and Nevis. And to be honest with you, integrating in the society over here in the Caribbean is actually very, very difficult and tough because, as I told you earlier, the Caribbeans over here, they have this negative stereotype and this stigma about Africans or whatsoever. So walking around in the street, you know, they call us monkeys, they call us all sorts of names. And as a young individual who has been through a lot with the boat incident, because
something grateful because basically I didn't have like a life jacket on, and I saw my brothers and sisters dying, you know, because everyone who took on that journey was trying to search for a better place where we could exercise for basic human rights. So I am lucky enough to be alive today, and I'm pleading on the organization, I'm pleading on the United States government, I'm pleading on everyone to, like, look out for us, you know, so we could feel alive again, because I still feel like I'm not myself, but I'm still going through a lot of stress. I still experience a lot of nightmares. And about the procedure I have with the United Nations, with the resettlement procedure, we've had several interviews with them, but they told us the procedure is going to take a long while. They told us the procedure is going to take a very, very long while. So I'm pleading on the organization, if the CAI organization for, like, shortening the procedure, I'll really, really, really be grateful.
Well, you know, we're praying that you get the relief that you need and the attention that you need, and that, you know, your cases can be expedited with the UN. You know, we're calling on the U.S. government to have humanitarian parole. This TPS is for those that are currently in the United States when this conflict happened, and that gives them a temporary protected status. The humanitarian parole allows a certain number of visas for those refugees that are outside of Cameroon that are looking to be reestablished to come to the United States. So we're praying that we can open up this process for more refugees. Imam, what is the reports that you have heard from other Cameroonian refugees that you've interacted with? And, you know, how long have they been calling on the government for humanitarian parole?
All right. Thank you, Dr. Boko. I think that... it's okay. I mean, I would say Mr. Okay, it's cool, bro.
Yeah,
what I would say here is that generally, the Cameroonian refugees, especially those who have been internally displaced, you know, there is no way somebody can be, first of all, homeless, and at the same time, he is scared and kind of being in the state of terror. And you expect the person to think on long-term aid. The first thing that comes to their mind is the short-term aid, where they can rest themselves, what they can eat or feed, healthcare, access to healthcare, like Dr. Geraldine earlier mentioned. And those practical aspects in the field, that's their general perception. But then they are hoping that the international community, especially the United Nations and Amnesty International, for that matter, to come into this matter and look at violations of human rights that is ongoing, and realize that it's a necessity that they should intervene with urgency. However, the perceptions still vary about mindset of starting themselves, as Elias mentioned the history, you realize that it was a federation of two people that came together, and then somehow along the way, the French government, which is rightly backed by the U.S. government, as you earlier mentioned, is already trying to assimilate every citizen of the English section. And in this case, it is difficult because this is kind of using force. And, you know, even God himself says in religion there's no force. So talking of you imposing your own culture on another person, instead, what majority of the refugees, from our experience, they are trying to relay here is that we should coexist with our differences. Most are advocating for a return to the federal system. And we have done some practical, visits in the fields through the Popular Action Party. And somehow the party is advocating for a return to the federal system, if possible, maybe with some sort of 12-state federation instead of the two-state federation. But however, it is the choice of the people to choose if they want to stay as a federated state with the French or with the current French government in Cameroon, or they want to secede. And the aspect of secession so far is what is leading to all these conflicts we are talking about. Here is the separation from the French government that is leading to this internal crisis that we have. And given the fact that we also have external crises from neighboring countries like Nigeria, Central African Republic, and from the southern part of the region, it aggravates the entire situation. But the general perception on the ground is that the U.S. government in particular should be able, through its embassy or through its ambassador on special mission, should be able to at least influence the mindset of the Cameroon government, because they are for the aspect of non-negotiation of the form of state. But in this case, that is not helping any situation. Not helping any situation. You cannot say that there is non-negotiation of the form of state, even with your own citizens. Okay, here we are not talking about negotiations with the terror or with the terrorist group, as they are, it is self-acclaimed here. You know, the separatist fighters are acclaimed terrorists here. It's okay, per the government view. Anyone who fights against the government is a terrorist. That's what they say. But for us, the citizens who are here, and for me in particular, who have been a victim of circumstance in several situations, where I've almost been arrested because of advocacy, and to a certain extent, I've been attacked on both sides, both on the separatist fighter side and on the government side. I can say that what we want is negotiation, dialogue, as she earlier mentioned. And in this case, the U.S. can be a facilitator. Here, I would say a moderator or a third party. And in this case, negotiating with the French government to hold a genuine dialogue, because a dialogue was held in 2021. That was a major national dialogue in Cameroon. It was held. But from all the experts and stakeholders who participated, most of them, their remarks were that it was not a dialogue, it was a monologue. Those who participated, I was not a participant in the dialogue, but I'm speaking from reports. I have been interviewed on several platforms. So most of the time, with some experts who attended the national dialogue, they gave their opinion. Most of them still hold it that it was a monologue, it wasn't a dialogue. Therefore, there was an agenda, a pre-proposed agenda to be discussed on by the government. And this is not helping any situation so far. But in this case, I think the U.S. government with its ambassador here in Cameroon can apply pressure on the government to be able to look into the situation in the sense that they should dialogue with those that deserve to speak on behalf of the English citizens. In this case, I think that is going to bring in change, because what we want is change, and we want a peaceful change, not change that comes with violence. For instance, maybe me talking here, because I am advocating for change, and I'm really insisting that the U.S. government should come in as a third party. One might see me as a radicalist, but then I think I am rational here, because it's just normal that each and everyone who has gone through a lot of trauma from, what, how do I call it, like marginalization, you know. You are in your own country, but you cannot exercise your human rights. And the moment you speak, maybe you speak the truth, you are being named, as Imran earlier mentioned. You know, there's a perception that the French government in particular has about us Anglophones. When we talk, they either insult us or tag us as being ungrateful or as being problematic as usual, or too demanding or complaining too much. But we are exercising our right. I cannot be a second-class citizen in my own country. It doesn't sound right, Mr. Robin. So I think that I have gone through a lot within the past 6 years, just to achieve my MSc program here. I have gone through a lot of intimidations on both sides of the actors involved in this armed conflict. Therefore, if I am talking on this platform, I'm not just talking on my own, maybe on my own premises, or I'm not talking on my own prejudice. I am talking on behalf of many others who don't even have the voice to speak like me.
I took my own voice away. I was muted. I want to thank you for sharing your personal experiences and your story and sharing your voice with the, you know, our American audience here, who has not probably had as much exposure on the Cameroonian issue as we would like or hope that they do. And, you know, we had some excellent insights here from you all. I think it's a starting place. It's not where we want to end. But, you know, I would love to hear, you know, final thoughts from Imran, who is, you know, currently in a refugee situation, in state kits, looking to come to the United States, seeking safe harbor. You know, what do you have to say to our audience? You know, we just want to hear from you and understand your story.
I would love to plead on the audience to see into our case. I will use case. Yeah, case is a good. I would love to plead on the audience. I would love to plead on Kaya to see into our case, because me, alongside many Cameroonians, we have been through a lot. We have gone through a lot of traumatic experiences. Myself and my brothers and sisters over here, alongside my fellow Cameroonians back home. Because me, for example, I've lost my cousin. My cousin was shot because of this crisis. My father's cattle, my father, he used to own cattle. His cattle were burned because of this crisis. I won't really love to talk about my personal experiences, but best believe me, I've been through a lot because of the crisis. And I just wish, like, the audience should, like, give us a voice where we can speak, and you guys should please help us. That's all I would say. Like, you guys should really please help us, because we have been through a lot. Me talking a lot is going to give me a lot of traumatic experiences, because...
Oh, don't share what you don't need to, but I think you've relayed a lot to us, given our audience in America an insight into how hard it's been to be a Cameroonian refugee. And, you know, we were finally able to be joined by Sylvia Bello, who is the founder of the Cameroonian American Council. And I'm so happy to have you back here. I can mute myself. But we would love to have some, you know, words from you about what the Cameroonian American Council is looking to do, how we can help people like Imran, how we can elevate the voices of people like Imam Salman. Sylvia, please join the program. You might have two devices on at the same time.
Okay.
You might check on the echoing.
We're going to work on that. We're going to give it a couple more tries. And if not, we're going to have Sylvia back on just for a one-on-one interview. Because CARE is going to be working with the Cameroonian American Council to the rest of the Muslim community to engage on. That includes pushing this issue with Congress. And it also includes meeting with DHS, promoting this, the need for a humanitarian parole. And, you know, we're going to try one more time with Sylvia. I think our producer has found a fix.
Okay. Salam, bonjour, hava in my native Yamba, the Northwest Cameroon. This is Sylvie Bello with the Cameroon American Council. Oh my God, CARE, thank you so much. Awesome partner. We appreciate you. When CARE say they work, they are the largest Muslim advocacy group. We fit right in, because healthcare, maybe working on all kinds of issues, urgent that you see on TV, but they're also working behind the scenes on little WhatsApp groups and little Telegram groups and little other things that I probably don't even know of for, you know, our Cameroonian Muslims. So thank you, CARE, for thinking about the diverse Muslim community. We absolutely appreciate you. And I don't even know what to say if you've already heard from our own Dahiru, who is a survivor. And in March during Ramadan, with his faith, survived. And at the Cameroon American Council, every single moment we think about Dahiru. We think about Betty, who is with him there. We think about the Cameroonians that he mentioned that were lost at sea, same Atlantic Ocean, where Africans 400 years ago were forced to come to America. Dahiru made that journey. And like many of the Africans 400 years ago who were also Muslims, for those who were Muslims, Dahiru, a Muslim Cameroonian, follows in the steps of his ancestor. And in the sense that he was forced, the same push factors that forced our ancestors 400 years ago. Africanness is the very same forces 400 years later that took Dahiru through the Atlantic Ocean. My last name is Bello. The Portuguese came to Cameroon, enslaved us on the continent, enslaved us up to 100 years of that. That's why Cameroon is called Cameroon, for Camaro, right? Then the Germans came, and the African Holocaust happened in Cameroon. They have to have practiced it somewhere. Guess where they practiced that? In Cameroon. They spelled Cameroon with a K. And on the eve of World War One, knowing they're losing the war, they killed Douala Mangabel, our king. They have to practice the African the Holocaust somewhere. They practiced it in Cameroon. Then the French and the British, and I'm only going to go into that because Dr. Geraldine has already broken down that area. The French and the British got Cameroon as spoils of war. Spoils of war. Spoils of war. Right? So, Dahiru, Cameroonian Muslim teenager, like the Cameroonian Muslims 400 years ago who were forced to leave Cameroon, actually, because present-day Cameroon is the site of Limbe. Cameroonians were stolen, transported through the same Atlantic Ocean where Dahiru, 400 years later, both capsized. Thank you, Chair, for working with us in making sure that the anti-Africanness in immigration, the anti-Africanness in America, leads to more just and equitable special humanitarian parole. And that here, truly, we're so appreciative, right? Because as we're listening to what's happening around on our TV, and just because the CARE Network members are listening to the TV and seeing what's happening in certain parts of the world, that does not mean that in other parts of the world where Cameroonian Muslims 400 years ago were forced into America, 400 years later, another Cameroonian Muslim is out there seeking to rejoin us in the U.S., that just because we don't make the news, that doesn't mean we don't happen. It's that's the same anti-Africanness that has me bearing the Portuguese name, even though I was born and raised in Douala, where King Douala Mangabel was killed by the Germans, right? That does not mean that we should stay silent. We want to invite each and every one of you to think about Dahiru. Think about Imam Saleh, whom we've had the pleasure of working with the Cameroonian Student Union, right? Join us. You can multitask. You can pray for Palestine and pray for Cameroon. Thank you.
We are praying for Cameroon, and we're not just praying for the Muslims, but we're praying for all Cameroonian refugees, whether they're Muslim, Christian, or of other traditions. The destabilization and the colonial history that has played out here is traumatic, and while there needs to be healing and bridge building in Cameroon, while there are refugees, I want to make sure that the United States is providing safe harbor, as you know, we have been one of the many factors that are affecting Cameroon, our foreign policy. So I just want to thank you, Sylvie Bello with the Cameroonian American Council, for raising the attention of this issue to care and really, you know, shepherding us through this process as we speak, you know, to the needs of the community, both within America and the diaspora. So, you know, with that, I just want to say that, you know, CARE is looking to stand with you, and we see our community, and we want to put you front and center in the spotlight, and we want to continue to promote these issues. So, yes, pray for Palestine, pray for Cameroon, and inshallah, you'll be hearing more programs and topics on this and more announcements in the future. So with that, I want to give everyone just 30 seconds. Anything you want to say to our audience? We're going to conclude today's program, but it won't be the last on this topic. Imam?
All right, thank you for the opportunity once more, my senior brother. I think all I have to say to our audience is that foremost, we should relent our efforts in praying. And I also pray that Kai should be able to kind of help our brother Imran. And lastly, I pray and hope that the U.S. government should do something about the crisis, the internal and external crisis in Cameroon. Thank you.
Thank you. Imran?
I would love to thank the audience. I would love to thank you most especially for creating this space for us, for me to share my experience. And I would love to beg the audience to put me in prayers, because right now I'm going through a very tough time mentally, physically, emotionally. I'm going through a very, very tough experience, me alongside my fellow Cameroonian brothers and sisters, Vikings and Kids and Legends. So I would love you all to put us in your prayers, because it's going to go a long way. Thank you.
Keep relying on Allah, and we will keep you in our prayers. Inshallah, we'll get the answers we're looking for. And Sylvie Bello, my turn honor.
Troublemaker extraordinaire here. We are looking forward to congressional court because Congress blanks out when it comes to black people. When it comes, I mean, in every situation, be it housing in the U.S., be it education, you know what I'm saying? Like the anti-blackness is in every single aspect of human life in America, including immigration. And I would like to just conclude by saying that, did you know, this is for the audience, I know CARE knows, especially Robert, did you know that there is a program where Ukraine has TPS and that same program, and other countries also have it, except an entire continent. The U.S. government sits there with a global map, right? That's what I'm guessing. Unless they just sit there with their preferred countries, who knows what goes on in there. There's not that many black people in those rooms anyway. But I'm guessing they go in there with a global map and they're thinking through immigration relief policies and they forget an entire continent. If you guess that country, that continent to be Camu, to be the Africa, then you're right. Special humanitarian parole has been given to are delighted, joined in not just talking about this anti-blackness issue, but this anti-Africanness issue. This will be history-making, that there are programs that can finally start the conversation of equity. And so when we get Special Material Parole, because Dahiru, I know praise a lot. He's, I'm just going to, I don't think he shared this while I was away, but I'm just going to say that when he lost his mat and just could not get any in St. Kitts, because for those of you who have friends and family in St. Kitts who are Muslim, please reach out to the Cameroon American Council, because Dahiru has been looking for a Muslim community. And when I went on Wikipedia, I think it said it was like 2% or 0.2%, very, very low number. So, if you're, you know, so please reach out. You know, he was using a cardboard spray there in St. Kitts. He was using a cardboard to pray. And sometimes I'll send him text messages, please pray for us. I'm going about to go to this Congress, and you know these people. Please pray for us. And he was using a cardboard to pray. And then when they decided that they were going to do a protest, right, to lift their voice during Juneteenth, they needed cardboard, so they had to use, you know, one of his cardboards. But with time, he was able to find a prayer mat. But if there are folks out there who want to connect with Dahiru and pray with him, please let me know. But yeah, so in the prayers, we would like, when we ask Dahiru to help us pray before we set out to go to Congress, we would like Congress to do that, put in a resolution about special material and parole, to do briefings, just like they do on both sides of the situation right now that is all over TV, right? Just as they do with every other thing. But no one is talking about the fact that immigration relief is anti-black and anti-African. It's not only anti-black, it's anti-African. Join us in creating history, guys. Join us in creating history. But we did not set out to create history, right? We set out so that Dahiru, a Cameroonian Muslim, who followed the path that other Cameroonian Muslims 400 years ago did, to get home. That's what we're trying to do. But when you do join to support Dahiru, we will be creating history together. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Sylvia. Thank you so much, Imran. Thank you so much, Imam Salman, and also for Dr. Geraldine Hamadok, who we lost to the internet connection, but we'll have back on the program.
Okay, dear listeners. Unfortunately, it went off at that particular point. As you heard, that's Robert, and I can't call his last name now. I know he's one of the administrators with CARE on Air, the Council on American Islamic Relations. And you, as you heard, the touching expression of the guests of Cameroon, it lets us know that if we're not up to date on the atrocities that are occurring worldwide, and especially with those whom we have a relationship, and even if that relationship is not known of, if we have the relationship ancestry-wise, historically-wise, then it would be best that we get to know that. But we want, as Robert mentioned, you know, the prayer. We have to stay grounded and stay balanced so that we can achieve the goal, and that is human connections, and that we, the any injustices, that we take it in stride as to how to approach clearing up the injustice. And we know ultimately Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one, through us, Allah provides the avenues. So we pray for those avenues to be reached while in our lifetime, inshallah, God willing. All right, well, this is Martha Naila Abdullah hosting and engineering for CARE on Air, the Council on American Islamic Relations. And you can revisit listening to this at its beginning and that is by your going to am360.org or American Muslim 360. Type in American Muslim 360, and the selection will be there as it gets into a podcast. All right. Thank you so much. And later tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time will be Not Just Talk with Michael Hameen. Please tune back in. And then tomorrow morning, Friday, CWSC Friday Roundtable from 8 to 10 a.m. I'll be there. One of our guests will be the director of CWSC Leadership Development Council and Internship, William Kareem. And inshallah, we will then hear a report and allow you to share for those who attended, a time to be grateful. All right? We look forward to your attendance. And as we get into the new year, December 17th through the 24th, the 23rd or 24th, we will be having the telethon. Yes, you are always looking forward to that telethon time of the year. Well, this is it. Starting Sunday, December 17th, you're invited to join us live right here on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. And then every day after 10 a.m. or at 10 a.m., Monday through Saturday, is a new day for Al-Islam, and that is with the host, the various hosts that come on a new day for Al-Islam. That's with William Kareem and the others. There are many, so you will enjoy just being there and having that very intelligent conversation as the various hosts bring their conversation to you. Okay, a new day for Al-Islam. And that's every day at 10 a.m. they're on. And the number is 515-605-9326. 515-605-9326. And then we'll be sharing information on IWDM with Mikhail Sahir and other guests. This is growing to be an asset to all of us. So we thank you. Assalamu alaikum. Join us at 7 p.m. this evening, all right, with Michael Hameen, Not Just Talk.